Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com. That's T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
Welcome back to the Paddle and Fin Podcast Network. We're brought to you by Pelican Built Tough. For all situations, go to pelican.com. Yak Gadget. For all your fine kayak fishing accessory needs, go to yakgadget.com. Eastport Marina, on the beautiful shores of Dale Hollow Lake. For all your lodging, kayaking, and fishing needs, go to eastport.info. Now let's get this show started.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to the final.
What's going on, everybody?
How you doing?
Oh, man. Oh, dude, it's been a day. Like, everything that I could do, work was just drawing forever. It was one of those 8-hour, actually 37-hour work days. And I was trying to go to Speedway, trying to get those pizza stuffers we were talking about. Of course, like I told you in the car, guess what happened at 10:30? They were all gone. Why would they be all gone, you wonder? Because they stopped making them at 9:30. So it's great.
It was the downhill of the day. Like, after that, everything that could go wrong went wrong. I got home. I'm getting the BFS set up for tomorrow. I'm like, you know, I'm going to give it another chance. Getting that all tied up. Surprisingly, my uni knot went great. It's the first time it's ever happened on the first try. So that was awesome. And then I couldn't get my transducer on my transducer arm. And it took me like 45 minutes because of stupid locking nut. It's just been a day. So I'm really excited to just relax.
Yeah.
And have some fun.
I know. You were getting a little frustrated before we started, and then we started talking about kayaks, and then you got all lit up and you're ready to go now. So we got a cool episode planned, guys. We're gonna be talking Jackson Gnar with Jamison Redding. What's up, dude?
Thank you guys for having me.
Oh yeah, of course.
So I know you've been on a ton of other Paddle and Fin shows and stuff, and you've probably given introductions, but for somebody that doesn't listen to those other shows or anything, can you give us a little background on you?
Yeah. So I've been with Jackson Kayak probably going on 10 years now. Over the last, year and a half, you may hear my kids in the background. They're getting put to bed. So sorry about that. But yeah, I've been with Jackson for about 10 years on the team. I've done a little bit of everything. I wore a lot of hats. And over the last couple of years, I took the brand manager role over the fishing side of the business. So basically, it kind of entails a little bit of connecting the dots between R&D, the team, marketing, and sales, just kind of helping head the direction of where we want to go with our fishing product and how we market it and who we work with. And so a lot of good, cool things there to get to kind of be in the middle of it all, and have my finger in a little bit of everything there, and done a lot of the video work over the years with Jackson. And this year I also am hosting a television show called The Road Trip Angler, which Jackson's a big sponsor of, and a few others. So, kayak fishing for a minute. So a lot of fun.
I believe that's the show that Dan Perry He went along with you for one episode, didn't he?
Yeah, I think so. On that, it was actually another show that host Ken Whiting hosts a show. I think it's called he's got a Paddle TV, I think is his YouTube channel, but I can't remember. Facing Waves, I think is the name of the television show. And he was doing a piece on the NAR, and Dan came out and helped us find some locations. It's tough when you go to a new spot. You guys know this, and you've literally never been there before. You've never been to that boat ramp or even fished that lake or whatever. So having somebody with some local knowledge to come out when you've got one day to try to make something happen for a YouTube or a TV episode, it's a lot of pressure. So having a little local knowledge is definitely very key.
Oh, yeah, I can definitely. That's like been one of the most intimidating things, because like me and Brad talked, be like, you know what, dude, we should start a YouTube channel and just go down the GMR and just fish like we're fishing. But then you go out and you're like, oh yeah, it's going to be a great day. And then we catch like 6 10-inch fish.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm so glad like I decided not to do this, because this would be the worst. Like I'd just be sitting there the whole time. This is stupid. I'm so mad. And like
people do that, right? Like they go out and they
happens. You're not wrong.
So I think, again, kids running everywhere up here, but I think when you just own it, you know, like this is mm-hmm. what happened today. You know, we try to put a pattern together, and then the day you do figure a pattern out and you get on some bigger fish, you know, it's a good learning experience that you can go back to. And I think that's one of the cool things about being involved with all the video projects that we've done over the years, is a lot of really cool memories that I actually can go back and look at, and I don't forget a lot of my fish catches or my fish losses. Probably remember the fish losses more than the fish catches. Yeah,
definitely.
But just having those moments that we can go back and look at, whether it's photo or video over the past decade, has been really a cool part of what I've been doing with Jackson and other brands.
That's cool. Yeah, man.
I think that's awesome. It's and you're right. It's we were just out 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks, you know, 2 weeks ago. I don't remember. My brain sucks. But I was throwing a big swim bait on the river, and I watched like the largest smallmouth on the river I've ever seen in my life come out from underneath the log. Cool. Didn't even open its mouth and just headbutted this tiny clash out of the water. And I was like, oh, and I kept trying to fish for it. And Brad came over and threw a Ned rig, hooked it. It broke off. Ugh. And like, if we would have recorded that, as terrible as it was, because I was really upset, it would have been awesome to look back. Like, it was pretty, like the whole course of events. He drops in the first time, pulls out a rock bass. I'm like, dude, I promise a rock bass didn't attack this tiny clash, I swear. And then he pulls up this monster smallmouth, and it jumps over a log, and then you just see his line, and Brad's arms just go straight down. I'm like, no.
I was surprised I even hooked into it. I wasn't expecting to, you know.
It sounds like a spawning fish right there. It sounds like it came out to chase you away and then ate something that was hanging out in the zone a little too long.
Yeah, it was either that. We saw a bunch of fry, so it could, like, that was weird about it. Like, there was a ton of already fry sitting there, so I was like, man, that's a fry garter. And that's a fry garter. That's the largest fry garter I've ever seen in my life. Like, this thing was ridiculous. Man, so
that happened to me on the new about two or three weeks ago. We were fishing, and I threw by a log up in a kind of a small eddy, and same thing, white chatterbait. So I could see the bait, right? The whole time I watched this just giant smallie come out and just knock it sideways.
Yeah.
You know, it stopped chattering. I'm just like, how did you not? And then I threw a Senko in there, and I never could get her to eat. I never saw her again, but I knew she was hanging out in that same spot by the way she ate that. But
that's funny, man. It's frustrating. It's just, that's the word for it. That's not the word I used. I used other words, but that was a word for it.
So let's get into this Jackson R, man. This is something you guys kind of like abruptly, like, boom, hit the market with it. And I was like, holy crap, where did this come from?
Yeah, well, awesome. It's good that we were able to keep the secret as long as we were. We have a good team, and a lot of dealers were kind of in the know. But I will say, you know, the boat was supposed to launch in a normal, like, launch window, which usually you launch your boats in the fall or late summer, because that's like ICAST and a lot of the trade shows happen, and it's when the new model years come out. But like I was telling you guys before we kind of went live here, this has been a passion for a lot of us. I mean, when I say that, there was a lot of ups and downs and a lot of, like, you know, almost pulled my beard out a couple times, I think. But it just took longer to get it right, and we're still dialing it in. We're still getting it right, and we will continue to do that, I'm sure, for the next several years figuring out ways to make it better and everything. But yeah, we worked on that boat for 2 years. And it's really unique for us at Jackson. I'll kind of share a little background of how we came to it. We knew for one that we wanted to simplify our pedal drive system across the board. And that if we were going to come out with a new pedal drive boat, that really had to be kind of the first and foremost thing that we concentrated on. And so that's where the FlexDrive Mark IV came from. We started working with some people in the biking industry, some engineers from the biking industry that basically just told us, you know, hey, this technology exists and you don't need to rethink it. And so that's where we came up with the belt drive and worked with some engineers there to do that. So that was kind of a sidebar. And it was this huge undertaking all by itself, right? We've got people testing it all over, putting hours and hours on it, hiding it from the public, prototypes. You know, I think we had 6 or 8 prototypes, and then we did a bunch of pre-production ones and tested them and had them in saltwater, had them in Panama, had them in, you know, up in Pennsylvania and Tennessee and Texas. I mean, just all over getting tested. So how the word didn't get out about that alone was pretty impressive.
I was going to say, you probably know Jason Ricketts. He was our shop manager of the shop me and Matt's affiliated with. And he never said one word about you guys testing.
Yeah, there was a lot of NDAs signed. So.
It's like, that's awesome.
Yeah, so, yeah, that was a big part of it. And the other thing was we knew that if we were going to be able to do that at the same time, we wanted to work on a new boat that really kind of answered to what kayak fishermen are doing these days, especially guys that are tournament anglers that are getting on bigger water, bigger lakes, bigger rivers or whatever, but also have a better option for people that want, you know, a fully rigged out boat to go offshore. They can handle the things that people are putting on their boats. 10 years ago, no one was putting dual 10-inch and 12-inch screens on their kayaks. You know, that just wasn't a thing. And that's what people are doing now. We didn't have motors. And if we did, they were a lot smaller than what we have now. So just trying to really look at all that. So one of the things we did that we've never done before again was we put a team of guys together from our team. We have a pretty extensive team of anglers. I think we have over 100 kayak fishermen on our Jackson fishing team. And we have a lot of really good tournament guys. We have a lot of good offshore guys that have been doing it for years. And so we just kind of put them all together in a think tank and like, what do you want in a boat? And then we tried to deliver as many of those things as they wanted. And it was a lot of work. I mean, we had never done some of the things that we did before, you know, making it where you could put a motor on the bow or the stern, quickly rig it, having this, when we came out with the tri-track idea, it was initially intended to be like 2-foot sections. And, you know, we're like, well, let's make it 5 feet long and bend it, you know, so there is a lot of stuff there. And then working to get with the Yak Attack to be able to have the top loading geometry in that tri-track. So there was a lot of moving parts and pieces. And I think it was something like 12 new injection molds had to be made for just the steering components for the multi-box, the little tackle box that you can hang off the tri-track. All the rod stagers and stuff like that. So it was the biggest undertaking that we've ever done as a brand, as far as developing a kayak for sure.
Very cool. I kind of want to start with the drive a little bit though. You guys completely redid the drive. I'm guessing, cause this is what everybody else does. You design the drive before you design the actual kayak, right?
So it was kind of going on at the same time. We knew when we started looking at the redesign of the drive, we've always been very proud of the fact that our drive is, you can hit stuff, you know, it kicks up and it tucks away and it's not in the way of the floor. When you pull the drive out, you're not having to have it, you know, take up a lot of space in the cockpit of the kayak. So we knew we didn't want to lose that functionality. And so we knew that part wasn't going to, as far as the geometry of the lower unit, even though we made changes to the inside workings of the lower part of the drive, we knew the geometry was going to be the same. So we were able to kind of start working on the boat at the same time that we were working on the drive.
Okay. That's cool. Well, go ahead, Matt.
So you basically, unlike what, you know, how Brad was saying, you know, how most people, you build the drive and then you build the kayak, you pretty much made them in conjunction together. So they'll work better together. Instead of making two products, you made one half of each or one half of the full product.
Yeah, I mean, and, awesome. And for us, we had the Big Rig FD, we've had the Bite FD, and the Kusa FD. So we had three, pedal driven kayaks. And if you look at even those hole shapes, we learned a lot on how to make the boat more efficient with a drive versus a paddle kayak. When obviously Jackson's background is paddle kayaks. So we've always understood how to make a good paddling kayak, but it's different when you're trying to make a good pedaling kayak. They're not the same. The way that you paddle, your propulsion is off to one side than the other. So you want a boat that tracks really well so that it kind of fights that walk the dog back and forth, where you lose a lot of your efficiency when you're doing a paddle stroke. When you drive straight underneath the boat, you don't have any of that. So if you design a hole for paddling, a lot of times what happens, you got a keel line that goes all the way kind of the length of the boat to keep it tracking straight. But if you do that on a pedal kayak, anytime you lean one way or the other, the boat's going to want to turn. So we kind of made a lot of adjustments to the hole shapes as we progressed. So we really felt like we could nail our team. I didn't have anything to do with the hole shape. We have a great hand shape. Tony Lee literally hand shapes our holes, which is kind of unique to us. There's not a lot of companies out there, or a lot of people out there that still, manipulate a boat by hand and don't use CAD at all. We're starting to dabble in CAD some now, but we, up until this point, no boat we've ever come out with was designed really fully in CAD. So it was all hand shaped. So he's been doing this for a long time and really understood. And that was where it kind of started, was what do we want the hole to be able to handle? And that was bigger water. If you're out on a lake and you're trying to cover some distance, you want to be fast. But if waves kick up, if wind kicks up, you don't want to be sitting there soaking wet, just taking waves over the bow. You want to be able to handle it. And so that was a big part of it. And then kind of, like I said, incorporating what we learned from the other pedal driven boats that we've made. And then you kind of have that like footprint of what that lower unit's going to look like. So we could start kicking that can pretty far down the road while we were working on the new drive at the same time.
That's nice. Otherwise, it probably would have taken a little bit longer to complete the whole process.
Yeah, it would have been it still took a lot longer than it should have. I'll say the boat should have been out in probably January, or at one point we thought it would be out in late fall. Then it was January. Then it was February. So that's why it kind of came out of nowhere, because it was like, all right, it's finally ready. Let's launch this thing.
Yeah,
that's cool. The drive. So what exactly is different from the new drive, or the old drive and the new drive?
Yeah. So our old drive used spiral bevel gears, which are very similar to what you might find in a transmission on a car. They're very precise gearing, and it used grease to keep those lubricated. And there was basically two sets of gears. So you had the upper part right where you were. Crank arms were, and then it, another set down where it would go turn for going into the hull of the boat for the lower part of the drive shaft. We eliminated, by going to the new drive and going to a belt drive system, we were able to eliminate half that equation. So we still have spiral bevel gears, but they're now able to be in a sealed cartridge. So they're in an oil bath, which is the way they're really designed to be. They should be in an oil, not with grease. And it's completely sealed, which makes it more maintenance free. There's no grease that needs to be added like there was in our old system. And the belt part of it is a Gates belt. It's a known technology that's been around in the biking industry forever, and it's designed around off the shelf bike parts. So we didn't reinvent anything. Now, we did develop our own crank arms, but they're literally made to off a pattern by off the shelf crank arms and that kind of thing. So it made it more efficient. It made it a lot quieter, a lot smoother, and a lot quieter. So it just felt like, even in your feet, you can just feel a difference. And it's virtually maintenance free. Other than rinsing it off, when you get out of the salt water or something, you really don't need to do anything to it. So like before, you had to put grease in it, and it might get hot. Just things, if any little tolerances were off, it can make it feel a little less smooth, and all that's kind of gone now.
That's good.
Yeah, it's a big difference. And it also, because of the increased efficiency, we were actually able to go up in a pitch on the prop. So it's a more aggressive prop now, which is also part of why the boats, all of our boats across the line are actually faster because of the new drive.
Okay. Yeah. That drive's interchangeable then?
So you can change out, because it's less gearing and there's more torque on it, we actually flipped the way the drive shaft and the lower is spun. Mm-hmm. So those flexible, if you ever use like one of those drill bits that, you know, you can go around a corner with, it's the same idea, or a weed eater. Same idea. It's that flexible shaft, but they're spun a certain way, designed for whatever rotation you're primarily doing. So the prop actually spins backwards or reverse of what it used to, counterclockwise now, because we eliminated half the gears. So it's not going through that change that it went through in the gear process, making it spin the other way. So we actually increase the diameter of that lower drive shaft and flip the direction that it's spun and have a reversed pitch prop. So in order to, it is reverse compatible in the sense that if you get a new upper and lower, it would fit into an older existing flex drive kayak because the bolt pattern is the same. So, but it is both. You do need the upper and lower to make it work.
Yeah. Less moving parts and probably a lot quicker.
It is a lot quicker. We're seeing just at a really comfortable cadence, about a half mile per hour increase on some of our models at the same cadence when we tested them side by side. So,
sweet.
Oh, that's awesome. And I know the big thing when it first came out, you know, like everyone else in the world, it, like Brad said, it just came out of nowhere. I think he's the one who texted me. He's like, dude, the NAR came out. And I was like, what's the NAR? And he was like, he's like, oh, he sent me the link. And I went on there and I was looking, and I was like, well, this is like, just, if it was a snake, I'd be dead. And I was looking, I know stealth is something like huge. You guys are on this. It's a much quieter drive, which a lot of people, especially your tournament anglers, will understand it. The joy of having a kayak is A, you can get into spots other people can't, but B, you can get into them a lot quieter.
Yeah.
So having a quiet drive, I mean, I've been in pedal kayaks where I'll pull the pedals up and, you know, or even my motor, I have an XI3 on the front of my kayak and I'll pull my XI3 up if I'm going in somewhere, it's super still, quiet. And I'll just barely lap at the water just to push myself along so I can make casts. So like how much, compared to the older drive, I'm sure you guys did some testing. How much quieter is it, or is it quantifiable? I mean, I'm sure
it's definitely quantifiable. I don't know that we've actually measured it. And I think one of the things with the old drive is that you would get some drives that would be super quiet and then others wouldn't be. And you never really knew why. I mean, a lot of it, like I said, to do with the type of gearing, it was very precise. Mm-hmm. And if it was dialed in perfect, it would be perfect. And the fact that if it didn't have the same amount of grease in it or whatever, with this one being in an oil bath, it's controlled, right? It's not a matter of you like putting grease in it, trying to figure out how much grease you should put in, or, you know, did it work itself in over time and get louder over time, or did it work itself in and get quieter over time? It's just quiet right out of the gate. Like there's no real break-in period. So it's definitely noticeable. Like, I mean, I don't want to say night and day, but it can be in some situations. But I think it's not only is it quieter, but you also just don't feel it as much in your feet. And it's a lot smoother feeling. So it just kind of all works together to where you really start to notice the hull shape, which is, you know, getting to the NAR design. It's like, if we're going to have a quiet drive, then this hull's got to also be very, very quiet, because you're now going to notice any water, you know, slapping the hull and vice versa. So
that's true. But Jackson's hull design has always been real nice. Like that front end of the boat has always been like that real nice curvature to where you don't really ever have to worry about the water slapping it.
Yeah, it's definitely been a thing. Like I said, we have that ace in the hole when it comes to hull shapes. We've got a guy that's been started out shaping surfboards, you know, years and years ago, has been shaping kayaks for over 20 years, maybe 30 years. I don't remember exactly how long, but, and has shaped boats for both us and other brands before us. And so it's almost a lost art. There's not a lot of people doing it anymore. So we're starting to work with, some new ways of using CAD and whatnot. And also combining his knowledge of being able to hand shape and bring those together so that we don't lose that, you know, that art that he's perfected over the years.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can tell you, if you've never, there's some videos, and I went down the YouTube rabbit hole like years ago, and I actually watched a, there's an old video of a guy shaping a surfboard, and it's, it, you can tell how, A, how meticulous it looks and how slow, but how precise. And like you said, it's an art. I mean, it's mm-hmm. like these guys who were doing that, those shaping those surfboards. And I can only imagine, I was literally going to say, you know, kind of explain, since you've got a firsthand look at it, explain what goes into like the shaping of the boat, because I didn't know they were hand shaped. That's awesome to me.
Yeah.
Like you're just taking an extra little bit of time. So
it was, yeah, it's so you start out with, and if you have boats that you're happy with, let's say that you've done before, you can kind of start there. And that's kind of what happened with the NAR. We worked off, started with a hull shape that we already had, and then really changed it a lot, but it gives you a starting mm-hmm. point. But basically you start with a block of foam, if you will, or you add foam to an existing block of foam or whatever, but you start with this block and you just start, you know, drawing lines and shaving it down. And I'm dumbing this way down, and Tony, if he hears this, will be like, what are you talking about? Because I've stood over his shoulder and watched him, but that's the extent of it. And you know, he's out there with strips of wood and looking at how they bend and how it curves, and then they'll take, you know, get it to a certain point and then try to figure out where the water line is going to be and that kind of thing, and just, and keep progressing it. When it comes to the bottom part of the, what we call the parting line down, it's just a lot of feel for him, knowing what we want the boat to do. For example, this boat has what we call rocker. And that just means mm-hmm. that you've got a little bit of lift on the bow and the stern. If you set it flat on the ground, you're going to see that there's some shape to it. And the reason for that specifically is, in bigger water where you're going to have some waves, being able to go up and over those waves instead of trying to pierce through them, where if you've got mm-hmm. a real flat boat, it's going to want to pierce the waves, take a bunch of water over the top, and it's going to make it a lot less stable.
Yeah.
For that secondary stability, which is what you want when you're going to be in rougher water. And so knowing that and watching him do it, and the fact that it's still symmetrical is what blows my mind, because he's doing it all kind of one side and then mimicking that to get the other side. And so it's a lot of fiberglass work, or, you know, putting compound on and then shaving it down. If he's got it too small, he can add material back and shave it down. And it just a lot of hand shaping going on. So it's just, it's really impressive, because
For sure.
For modern day, what a lot of companies do, and what we're starting to do a little bit of, is you develop a design in CAD, and then you would have a giant CNC machine basically cut out that shape out of a block of foam. But even if we do that, we still have the opportunity to go back to him, and he can kind of put those finishing touches on it and make sure it's what we want, you know, for the end game. But it takes time. It's a lot of time. It's a lot of looking at everything and how it lays out, and then going back and checking it and seeing if it's doing what you want it to do. See if it's sitting right in the water, and prototyping and making sure that, you know, it can handle the weight and stuff that we're throwing at it.
That's cool. It really reminds me of those, like back in like ancient Greece and ancient Rome, when people would take giant blocks. Like the thing I'm thinking about the whole time you're explaining this is seeing some dude take a giant block of stone, and then he makes it into a sculpture. 'Cause it's the same thing. Like you're taking a base block, and then he's going through meticulously cutting that down. And he's probably like those guys where he's like, he's looking at, he could look at a block of foam and be like, there's a boat in there. Like, that's just like, that's, I remember it was something on History Channel or something I was watching. It was a reenactment of like a famous artist. I don't remember, but he was looking at it and he said, there's a sculpture in that block of rock. And I was like, okay, I'm sure he didn't say that, but no, he probably did. Like, and just like, he probably says, he looks at foam and he's like, there's a boat in there. That here, he looks at it and says, that's the NAR.
Yeah, it's definitely a vision, and he kind of breaks it down, you know, one section at a time. But it just blows my mind. Like, I don't how we're able to take our ideas and what we come up with in a chat with a bunch of team guys, and then I'd try to draw my 6-year-old can draw better than me, you know, and I try to draw out the deck layout of this boat, and really nothing to do with the hull, because I'm not even going to attempt that. Just, this is what we want it to do. This is an ideal length, ideal width. We'd like it to be in this weight range. And we want it to do these things. And then he takes all that and kind of computes it into what you see there as a hole shape. And then we kind of work off that and get our deck layout of where we want everything, you know, where we want track, where we want the rod storage to be, the hatches to be, that kind of thing.
So let's talk about the specs for a little bit. What made you guys decide on a 13-foot, 9-inch kayak?
You know, a lot of that just happened as far as what all we wanted to fit in it. And I will say that, you know, obviously you've got other brands in the industry, and you look at kind of what they're doing and where they're competing at. And there's always kind of been this 10-foot, 12-foot, 14-foot kind of range of boats. And when you think about big water, or you think about just, you know, being a rigged out boat, like 14-foot is that bigger, usually that bigger category. Now, we built boats over 15 feet when you're talking about like a true paddling touring kayak or a kayak that you're going to take and paddle. The longer it is, the faster it's going to be, because it's going to track straighter for the most part. And so that's kind of where we came to. We knew we wanted it to be, you know, able to put all this stuff in it that we wanted on it. And it just like to have that room, the kayak kind of grew to that size. But again, also just to put it up in a category, in that size category, where it can compete against, you know, the Titans, the Hobie Pro Anglers, and really stack up against boats that I would say are in that realm or whatever, that fully decked out tournament, flagship level, I would call it almost professional, you know, kayak fishing grade boat, you know.
No, I agree with that. And
yeah, for sure.
Sorry, Matt. I thought you were going to say something.
No, I mean, I can. Yeah, for sure. I can add to that. No, I agree. When you look at, like, it's how I was in a 10-foot kayak 2 years ago, just fishing rivers, and I would take it on bigger lakes and hate my life and whatnot. But you look at the, like you said, the Hobies, the Titans, the Gnar, you think 14-foot, automatically what I think, I was like, well, this is it's a tournament rig. Or it's a rig that it's going to be you're going to see it's a big water rig. And what's awesome about it, kind of like what you already said, you know, it's 14 foot, but it tracks great because it's a little bit longer, but the drive is quieter, and it can, you know, it's not just that big rig boat. Like, you can use this for other aspects, which is
cool. And I would really encourage people, you know, I'm sitting here, Jackson Kayak, obviously I'm proud of this boat. This has been a part of, you know, when I took the role, this is kind of the first boat that I've seen from start to finish as brand manager. So I'm very proud of our team and everybody that came together for this boat. And I'm a little partial. However, I did compare it to a lot of other models, and we actually got out on the water in a lot of other models. And I would say that anybody that gets a chance to demo this, whether it's borrowing one from one of the team members that has one already, or one of the shops that's been lucky enough to receive some, go demo it, because this boat will surprise you how fast it is. It is a very fast drive, but it's actually, out of all of our models, it's one of our fastest models. In fact, I think it is the fastest. I'm averaging around 3.5 to 3.7 at a very comfortable just cadence, which is scooting. And a lot of that has to do with that hull shape and the way it cuts through the water. And that was a big ask. You know, we wanted, you know, tournament guys want to be there out there fast. Same with offshore. You're trying to go 3-4 miles offshore to hit a wreck or troll. You don't want to spend all day getting there. You want to get there and do your thing, and you want to be able to do it and not be tired once you get there, because you got to come back. And so that was a big thing. Is it is a bigger boat, and it is fully riggable, but on the water it doesn't feel like you're, you know, turning this giant barge or pushing this big barge through the water. It really does. It turns very efficiently, and it's a very fast boat.
How does the thing paddle, like, if you have to pull the drive up?
Yeah, so that was another thing, and it's hard. Like I said before, it's kind of hard to, you know, nail one right in the middle, right? You're either going to have a great pedaling boat, or you're going to have a great paddling kayak. But surprisingly, it's our, I would say it's our most efficient paddling pedal drive. The bite may be a little more or a little easier because it's lighter and smaller and nimble. But as far as, like, once you get this thing up and moving, it's really not bad. And on Gunnersville, you guys mentioned that. I don't know if we were live yet when you were talking about that earlier. Mm-hmm. We had a lot of water to cover that was really shallow, a lot of grass to get to some spots that we were going to fish. And so I ended up paddling the thing for several miles by the time we went there and back. And, you know, I didn't hate it at all. Like mm-hmm. it did what it was supposed to do. Now, if I was looking for a good paddling kayak, we have a lot better options for a good paddling kayak. But, you know, somebody asked me the other day about, you know, do you really need a paddle and a pedal kayak? And it's like, mm-hmm. yeah, you do, because you can't always use your pedal drive. And it, if you're going to stand up or whatever, there's a lot of reasons that, you know, you still need a good paddle. And so, yeah, I'm happy to say that I think, you know, it paddles pretty well considering, and for its size, I would even, again, partial, I'd say test it yourself. Mm-hmm. But for its size and category, I would put it up there as the best paddling big kayak on the market right now.
I don't know if you saw
a lot of it. I mean, it's just, it looks yeah. fast.
Yeah.
I don't know if you saw Chad Hoover's video or not, but he
did. Actually, yeah. He called me when he was going to go hook up with Richard and, mm-hmm. and get a chance to get in that boat. So it was interesting to see his take on it.
Yeah. He actually paddled it. And I'm like, does it look like he's actually straining that much? That's pretty cool for a big boat.
It's not hard. And the nice thing about having that track throughout for me, it makes it really easy. The way I've kind of left a little mm-hmm. bit of slack in my electronics and mm-hmm. things that I have mounted, so I can just quickly loosen the thumb screw and slide everything kind of out of my paddle stroke. Mm-hmm. And that keeps it, makes it easy to be able to break that paddle out when you need to.
Yeah. So that tri-track, let's talk about that a little bit. Cause that's pretty cool.
I was literally getting ready to say that's
a big part of this boat. We launched it on the Take Two, which is more in our rec line. However, mm-hmm. That boat is a very fishable boat, and I'm seeing a lot more people rig that boat up with, you know, trolling motors, and I've got a Torquedo on mine and I fish it solo. It's a tandem boat. But we launched the tri-track on that, and kind of immediately, I think everyone on the team, myself included, were like, you know what? It'd be really cool if we had like 12 feet of this.
Yeah.
and we That's wanted awesome. It to look the part and really fit and finish wise. So it was a big, I don't want to say battle, but it was kind of a fun few days where it was us going back and forth with R&D, like, no, we want to bend it. And we want, like, you know, each section to be 3.5-4 feet long. Like, they're like, wait, what? So, we're not even sure you can do that. And I'm like, oh, we think you can do it.
Figure it out. It's going
to
happen.
Yeah, it was, I think at one point I actually took a piece of track over to a rack and bent it at the R&D department and like made sure the T-bolts would still go in and slide, you know. And
that's a good point.
It was because we were bending track. If you think about it, we were bending it on two different ways, vertical and mm-hmm. Horizontal or whatever, because it's got track on all three sides. So you kind of had to make sure that it was still going to do what it was supposed to do.
Yeah.
And that you could slide a T-bolt in and you could use top loading geometry.
So yeah, that's sorry, Brad. That's what, when I saw the T-track, I was like, you know, does stuff still move? And how you just said, when I want to start paddling, I can just unloosen and slide it up. That's what's awesome to me, because it not only lets you do whatever rigging you want, it lets you do whatever rigging on the fly that you need. So if you need to push something up, you just push it up and it follows that track flawlessly, mm-hmm. which is awesome. Yeah.
The big thing about it was, I know there's other, you know, again, there's people out there that have competing similarities or whatever, but I've always thought, you know, if you have to go buy a bunch of adapters to make things you already have work, then it doesn't really make sense. You know, we all know Yak mm-hmm. Attack and some of the other brands like Yak Gadget and stuff and Ram or Scotty, whoever, they all make something that works in this particular type of track.
Mm-hmm.
And so the thought of having to go out and buy like another part or piece to make that work didn't make sense, you know. So we thought, if you can put this anywhere without having to take something you've already mounted off, so being able to use that top loading geometry from Yak Attack was awesome. And then you know, just being able to make it kind of infinite, like you've got full range of adjustment in the cockpit area and full range of adjustment from your hip all the way through the tank well, so you really can dial it in even after you're on the water. You don't have to worry about like losing something, because you don't have to take it all the way off the boat to move it to another location.
Mm-hmm. So is this a Tri-Track, is this something you guys kind of took the idea from the U-Pick a little bit?
Sort of, kind of. And I would say that the U-Pick was definitely like the direction of let's make a very versatile,
mm-hmm.
simple, yet easily rigged platform. So definitely the U-Pick was kind of that first step in that direction of just giving you that blank slate and allowing you to kind of make it your own, but do it really easy. So you didn't have to drill holes or add track here or there or whatever. So it was definitely the first step. And honestly, like if you look at what's called 80-20, which a lot of guys will build like CNC router or use in woodworking and stuff, it's that's where it came from, because we were working on a 3D printer that used this 80-20 metal, which, you know, is kind of an erector set for adults, I guess. And it's got T-tracks on four sides. So that's kind of where our R&D department was like, well, why wouldn't we just do this on a boat but make sure it's the right T to be able to handle that T-bolts and stuff that people use. And so that's kind of where it started. Again, very simple. It's not we didn't reinvent the wheel because that 80-20 stuff's out there. But no one put it on a kayak yet. So
it's, yeah,
you know, like let's make it easy. Let's make it, you know, fully riggable. And I think we accomplished it. And a lot of it too had to do with our seat system. I know we kind of hadn't got to that yet, but up until this point, based on our old seat designs and how we managed high, low and being able to trim forward and aft, we were kind of stuck to our gunnels being the same width as our seat, because we needed that the boat to be part of the support that held the seat up. And so once we were able to kind of come up with a self-supporting seat to be able to go high and low, that allowed us to open those gunnel or open that cockpit area up and go to a thin gunnel. So moving away from like the big rig, which had these big troughs on the outside of the boat on both sides, we now could use all that space, bring it inside the boat. And this boat is actually not as wide as the big rig, but it feels like you have tons more room because the cockpit area is all completely used. You're not wasting any space with, you know, having to have those gunnels in tighter. So
that's the first thing that I thought of when I saw it too. I was like, that looks a lot wider than the big rig. I'm kind of surprised that it's not. That's crazy.
Yeah. We were able to, you know, shrink it a little bit. Like I said, but you actually have way more usable space than you did on the big rig, because you sacrifice some of that just for structure and how our seat system had to be. So,
yeah, that's big to me, because I love having my rods horizontal on the sides.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, and you could do it, like I said, on the big rig, but again, it was outside the boat, right? So, like, it was different. And putting it inside, we were able to go to a little bit taller gunnel too. By bringing them in, you can still get your paddle stroke like you need to. But that's going to keep you drier, keep your gear drier. So yeah, a lot of things that happened again at the same time. The drive, we developed that high-low seat system that went across the board kind of in all of our models. By doing that, it allowed us to really accomplish what we wanted to on this boat.
Very cool.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you want to go into the seat a little bit, talk a little bit about it? Because I think...
Yeah, it's still pretty simple, and I kind of alluded to this a little bit. You know, we're always looking at ways to improve, and I think that we definitely... I would love to spend a lot of time now that we've got, you know, a really good platform and dial in things like the seat over the next couple of years. But one of the really cool features about this seat is how easy... We've always had high-low. That was one of the things we launched with our very first fishing kayak, the Coosa. And so it's been a big deal. Then we kind of added trimmable seating, which you have to have if you're going to have a pedal drive and you need to adjust for your leg length. And so being able to kind of make that independent from the boat was where we were going with this. And we call it the easy high low seat slider system. It's a lot to say, but it allows the whole system kind of to be independent from the boat. It mounts to the two tracks on each side there. It gives you the forward and aft adjustment, but there's no pins anymore. Like our older high-low seat systems, you had to put a pin in when you put it in the low. You had to put a pin in when you put it in the high. So our R&D team really killed it with this, where you just kind of lift your weight off the seat and grab the front of the seat, and it'll slide kind of up and down. And I think I put a couple of videos out just kind of joking about how easy it really is. It's like harder to say easy high-low seat slider system than it is to actually like raise the seat up and down. So again, just trying to keep it simple, make it easy to go into that high-low position. But again, that allowed us to have it self-supported, which, you know, allowed us to really open up those that cockpit area and have the ability to store rods down the side. And that was a big ask for this boat from the team, was being able to bring some rods inside the boat and not have them hanging out outside in the troughs like it does on the big rig.
Yep. Yeah, I like that feature a lot. That's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, it's the stuff that you sorry, I was a little zoning out. I'm actually looking at it on – I'm looking at the same page Brad is, just looking at all the different features. And I keep, like, going back to it and looking at something. And I was like, oh, that caught my eye. I never noticed that before. Like, at the front, you have those tie-downs that are integrated in the hull. Like that little feature alone, those right there, right where Brad's showing right now. That's awesome. It's just little stuff.
Awesome. There's a lot of little things like that that don't jump right out at you. Those little, they're aluminum too. So they're very stout security bars there. And that's if you want to strap some extra gear, you are going on a longer trip, or you want to throw a dry bag up there, or, you know, potentially a fish bag in the future. If somebody wants to come out with one of those. You'd have a really easy way to attach that to the boat and not have to think about it. And so, you know, the little things like that. And then we had the extra space, and this is credit to, this was actually not in the original drawing, but right behind the wall there between the two sets of rod tubes, that little space was just going to kind of be a, I guess, free space really. And our boat shaper Tony was able to like go in there and go, okay, well, you could fit a, you know, let's give this some geometry to be able to set a, you know, 27 group battery if you're running a motor off the stern to offset that weight, or put a cooler bag, or put a tackle bag there, put some more security tie downs there. I see a lot of people, and I think I told you guys, you said you're running a motor guide as well. I'm installing the new Saltwater XI3 literally before we started this on the bow of the NAR. And there's a lot of ways to do that, but most people are using the quick release kind of plate. And so it's just like, why not just have a flat place on the boat right up front, where if you're going to do that, it's easy. You don't need an adapter plate or go buy, you know, something again from someone else. You can just through bolt that plate. You know, if you want to back it, I actually took a piece of starboard from a cutting board I had laying around, and I just cut me a quick backing plate. And I know a couple companies are already working on backing plates, but just for the added security, when we first tested it, all we did was put some big fender washers on the back of it, and we didn't have any issues. But you know, if you want to throw a backing plate on there, you can access it through bolt that, and it's just really quick and easy way to install a bow mount trolling motor on there.
Yeah, that's interesting. I know everybody's doing like bolt patterns on the front, but yours is just completely flat. I did not realize that until you said
the bolt pattern. Like, for example, it's become very popular, and it's funny because I think our big rig was one of the, I think it was the first kayak to actually have the power pole bolt pattern in the boat. Hobie the same year came out with a bracket that would adapt. So they were very forward thinking as well, but we just happened to be working on our big rig when we found out power pole was going to be a thing. So we were able to kind of partner with them, and the year they released their power pole micro was the year we released the big rig, and it just worked out that we had those inserts. And now it's become such a big thing with motor mounts like Torquedo and others that are kind of piggybacking off of that geometry that a lot of kayak companies have incorporated into the back of the boat. The thing is, though, the quick release plates that you get from like Motor Guide or Minn Kota or whoever are not that bolt pattern. So that bolt pattern will allow you to mount an adapter, and then you can mount that. But I'm just like,
yeah,
you can reach it. And I think most people at this point in time are kind of used to drilling a hole or two in their boat. It's a little intimidating. Yeah, you want to make sure you get in the right place. But yeah, I think it just, it makes it easy, and you don't have to, again, buy an aftermarket part to be able to adapt something up there.
Yeah, those plates aren't cheap.
Oh, no. No, I mean, the plate on the front of my boat was, I want to say,
$120 bucks or something.
Yeah, you're already like $109 just for the adapter from Motor Guide.
Yeah. I will say it was the adapter was 55 or 60, 59. And then that was 109. So I'm looking at $170, $180 just to be able to put the $1,200 motor on my boat. So like it's never ending, especially as somebody who works in retail. Like I'm used to it, but then when I have to do it, I'm annoyed. Yeah. But I understand, like, it's just, it sucks. So having it there just ready to through hole. And you're right. I mean, most people nowadays, you know, I cut 2 1-inch holes in my boat last year and I cried a little bit because I thought I was going to screw it up, but I just was like, whatever, I'll just do it. And it did it and it worked. So, you know, you never know.
Well, that's kind of the same thing with the pass-throughs. The boat comes with 2 of the Yak Attack pass-throughs, but you know, we were debating on like, okay, let's install these. Well, where does everybody want them? And it's different for every person. I want mine on the left side of my boat and, some people may want them on the right side. So we just throw them in there as a kit. And
that's
instead of putting it in, again, it's a little intimidating. The instructions are in there from Yak Attack. And, you know, I had to drill a 1-inch hole through 2 of them in my boat to put them where I wanted them. But I just, you know, it's really nice. Some of the boats that come with them, I think it's awesome. And that was the original intention, was that we would install them. But then it just became like, well, where? Like, you know, and how many? And
I think it gets down to the joy of kayaking. What I always come back and tell people, especially people who are getting into it, like, why do you love kayak fishing? It's like, well, I love fishing. Like, I'll just go out with a rod and reel and fish for the bank. But kayak fishing, the joy of it is everything's customizable, which can be like that on big boats. But 9 times out of 10, if you get a big bass boat, your rod locker is either on the left, the right, or now in the middle. That's just where it is. If you want to change it, you have to build stuff and it gets out of the way. With kayaks, it's blank. Like you can put, some people like to put their pass-throughs for XI3s, literally XI3 wire pass-through. Like it's just right there. Yeah. And then like me, I did mine. I wanted a little bit more length just so it has a little bit more cable and mine's over to the left. Some people like it over to the right. You know, some, you know, it just depends and you make it your own. So while it's cool, some companies make it to where the pass-throughs are there, which is awesome. Doing it yourself, while, like you said, it can be intimidating cutting a 1-inch hole in your boat. It makes it more personal. Once it's done, you feel more accomplished. And then especially when it works, like, cause believe me, I've done stuff and it didn't work. And I was like, well, I'm up a river now. But when it works and it works exactly like you want it to, it just makes you overall enjoy it, which will, in my opinion, keep people in the sport of kayak fishing longer.
So. No, 100%. It's kind of fun. I mean, I'm out there. I say it's fun. So it's not fun when you're breaking bolt heads off like you and I both have done today.
Yes.
But it is kind of fun to kind of figure out where you want things. And after you've done it for years, you learn where you want things and where things should be. And it's easier each time you rig a boat. But
guys like us that do it have done it for long periods of time. Right. It's just like... Mm-hmm. You get comfortable with something, then you start thinking like, I wonder what it'd be like if I put it there. Mm-hmm. And then you got to go through the whole process again.
Yeah.
But it's for fun. Sure.
I mean, I don't know that I ever thought I would be rigging both an 1103 and an XI3 1103 torpedo and a motor guide XI3 on the same boat. I don't think I ever really thought I would do that. And I don't know that I'm going to use it that way.
Yeah.
But I just think I have them. I should try it and just see. And I mean, the reason I have them is because I'm lucky enough to work in this industry and these brands have supported me for a long time, but also, you know, we're kind of showing what this boat's capable of. And so I'm like, I'm going to mount them both on the same boat and then go out and, you know, kind of test it that way and just
turn them both on at the same time.
I'm
going to wreck is what's going to happen. I'm going to freak out. I'm going to hit a button the wrong way and spot lock while I'm pushing it.
I was about to say, what's going to happen is you're going to be going, Torquito is going to be going as fast as you can. The XI3 is going to be going at Mach Jesus. The XI3 is going to be going at Mach Jesus with heading lock. And just a little, while I love the XI3, I think it's awesome. If you go at max speed with heading lock, it sometimes thinks straight is left or right. And it will just take you another direction. So I can just imagine you're just, especially on Gunners or something, you're just cruising along going like 8 miles an hour, heading lock, and then boop. And it just like, I mean, you know. Yeah. So make sure you tie stuff down.
Yeah, I imagine I'll probably keep one. I'll keep one up while the other's down.
You know, you ought to.
One's my outboard and one's my trolling motor.
Yeah.
You You ought to set them going in different directions, see how fast you can go in a circle.
Oh my gosh. Shallow water with no gear.
Yeah. I'm just going to be kind sitting of there holding on to the seat like, oh, this is a bad idea.
That'll be fun.
One thing I kind of wanted to talk about, since especially since this was kind of designed for your offshore guys, your big water guys, that the bait take scupper, can you go into that a little bit?
Because yeah, that's one of the things I haven't really got to showcase in any of the walkthrough videos yet, just because it takes some rigging again. And we had prototype or pre-production boats down in Panama, and we filmed a lot of the video content that you guys see. And so I haven't really got to build out a bait tank for myself. We used to have the boat called the Kraken. For those of you who've been in the industry for a minute, you might remember it. It was a Jim Salmon's signature series boat, and Jim has been one of the bigger names in kayak fishing, especially when it comes to offshore fishing, and kind of helped put that on the map as far as getting in front of a lot of people, and was worked with a lot of brands way back. And so he had a lot of ideas of things to do when it comes to a paddle kayak for offshore. And one of the things a lot of us were doing, myself included, was you build a bait tank and you'd essentially come up with a pump and you'd throw it over the side of the kayak and you'd drag it around all day while it pumped water into your pet food container or whatever you turned into a bait tank. And then the water would fill up and you'd have an overflow and it would overflow and go back out the other side of the kayak. But you were dragging that pump around, and if you wanted to get it in, you had to just kind of pick it up and set it in the back of the boat. One of the nice things about the pump being in the water, though, is that you don't have to – it's kind of self-priming. You don't have to prime the tank or put water in the tank to get the pump to start working, because it's got to obviously be in water to suck water. Mm-hmm. The idea he had was to put one in the hull of the boat, kind of like you have a transducer scupper, basically open up a scupper that you'd be able to mount. I think Tsunami makes the pump, but it's a pump designed to go on the bottom of a boat and be able to, suck water and be flush. Mm-hmm. And so we did that on the Kraken, and then it just kind of got lost when the Kraken, got discontinued. That feature got lost with us. And I don't really know why. I mean, honestly, we should have had it in a lot of our boats. The Coosa FD definitely should have had it, for example, because that's one of our boats that people were taking offshore. So when we talked about this being a big water boat, we're like, we got to have that bait tank scupper back so that, you can turn your pet food container. Again, you can buy an off-the-shelf bait tank, but a lot of these things, we used to always DIY it. They didn't exist. Now there's some great stuff out there. And we're lucky to have it. But kind of open it back up. Hey, you want to buy a bait tank, buy one. If not, you got a bait tank scupper, buy you a pump and something that holds water and some hose and go to town. I want to get, hopefully this summer, I want to get to spend some time offshore down in Florida or somewhere. And so I've got to rig up mine. I've got a couple of old, we don't make it anymore, unfortunately. But the old Kraken crates that were actually our kind of take on that. And so I've got one or two that I held back. One's plumbed already and one's not. So only problem is they're not the right colors. So I may have to spray paint or something. I don't know.
I was about to say that's the joy of this company called Rust-Oleum.
Yeah. I don't know how that's going to do on plastic, but we'll see.
Oh, they make a plastic spray paint, and it works great.
I've got a bright orange Kraken crate and a red boat. So
they're close to the same. Whatever. Screw it. Someone's gonna care. But yeah, I mean, I think it's kind of like what those tie downs were. It's just another thing. And what's cool about it is you can make it flush. Because a lot of guys, like for me, I still don't, especially these newer boats, I'm old school, just like how I fish in certain aspects. I don't like mounting my transducer to the boat because I'm afraid I'm going to hit something. But all these, like the NAR, it's flush, and you can put that bilge. Well, it's not a bilge pump, but I mean,
it is a bilge pump. I mean,
it's a bait tank pump. Yeah.
But,
so you can,
but yeah, it's put flush with the bottom back of the boat. It's not going to snag anything or grab anything. And if you're not using it, one of the things we did on the Kraken, it was just kind of an open. So it was a really large kind of open hole in the top of the boat. But we put a cover over it in the NAR. So it looks no bigger than a regular scupper. You can't even really see it here in the picture because it's hidden by the seat. on the bottom there, you can see it. It's still just a round scupper, the one that's in the middle of those four there where your mouse is. That's it. On the top, it's a bigger hole because it's got to house the pump. But right now there's a cover over it, a black thermoform cover with four screws. You can take those screws out, and then you could, you know, put that bait tank pump in there. But if you're not using it, it's not like you've got this giant hole or cavity in the boat.
Interesting. Very cool, man.
That's super cool. And then, like, at the back, it just keeps going to where you have the multi-box that you guys have put into it.
Yeah, again, yeah, the seat kind of blocks that. Now, you can put that anywhere on the tri-track, and it's also adjustable height-wise. So you can actually, like, raise it up on the tri-track on either side of the seat and still get some of your rod storage under it. Or hang it. I've seen some guys hang it on the outside of the boat, and it's got the tool, you know, places to put tools and whatnot. I've actually taken mine and mounted it. It was kind of a not planned at all, but one of those things where Yak Attack was developing their new Black Pack, and I got one of those almost about the same time that I got my first multi-box. And I think Matt Ball was the first one to figure it out, but the bolt pattern is like perfect for the mounts that we use for the multi-box. So you can literally mount that up, and I've got mine hanging on my Black Pack, which is nice because then when I want to take it in and out of the boat, it's really quick and easy.
That's cool.
But that box, again, it's got a lid, you can actually remove the lid if you want to just use it for a couple 3700 tackle boxes. But I use it as a catch-all. Like when I'm taking baits off throughout the day, I can just open it and throw my baits in there and not have to, because I don't like putting them back in the waterproof boxes while they're still wet and everything.
Yeah. So it
gives them a chance to dry out. The box actually has some drain holes in the bottom, but I keep my pliers in there. I keep, you know, O-ring tool and just random, my car keys, just random stuff that used to end up in either the bottom of the kayak in a scupper hole or in the bottom of my Black Pack. And I would find, you know, 6 months later with rusted hooks or whatever. So it's
been there, done that.
It's a cool little feature.
Yeah, me too.
One of the things you can't see is under the tri-track in the back, there's actually cutouts between the tri-track and the hole in a couple of places. So you can run webbing, like 1-inch cam straps or even bungee. So you can secure whatever you throw back there without, you know, having to mount something to the track. You can go under the track and
still
leave the track open.
So you mentioned the Black Pack and stuff. I'm guessing it fits both ways in the rear tank well. Does the Yak Gadget?
It does. I've got back there both a 16 by 16 and the 16 by 13 at my house, and I tried them every way you can configure them, and they fit.
Awesome.
So,
what about other crates?
So, we tried the Yak Gadget one. We made sure we have one of those. We didn't actually know the Black Pack was coming when we designed it, so we kind of got lucky there. But at the time, the Yak Gadget crate was one of the bigger ones on the market. So we actually kind of made sure it would fit, knowing that if it did, the Black Pack would. And then when the new Black Pack came out, I was like, oh, hope it fits somehow. Measuring. Like, cause I had the 13 by 16, they sent me one of those to test, and for the show, and it had 3D printed parts on it, but I'm like, okay, if the other one's going to be 16 by 16. So I mounted the rods on both sides and measured it that way. And it still fits every way you can think. So that worked out really well, for sure. But I've got the 16 by 16 in the back, plus the box still mounted to it, and four rod holders. So
that has to be one of the most like asked questions with people, like rear wells and crates. Like, will this crate fit back there? I'm like,
yeah, no. We tried, and same thing with transducers. We made, I don't want to say a mistake, but back when we partnered with Raymarine on some of our boats, like the big rig, and we built our transducer scupper kind of around their transducer, which still allowed you to put a lot of the smaller transducers, but transducers change so quick and there's so many different sizes. So we actually 3D printed a whole lot of the more common transducers on the market and then tried to go with like the biggest one and make sure that if the biggest one would fit, the rest of them should fall into suit. So kind of did the same thing with the tank well. Was like, you know, well, let's just look at the biggest crate we can find that's out there. And if it'll fit, then everything else should fall in line. And you know, but we still, that was the other thing too, is we still wanted to have in-hole access and storage in the back. And I've always been a big fan of having front and rear hatches, whether it's just for rigging or being able to, you know, take a bunch of gear. If you're going, I love to do overnight trips, and it, you put all your weight in the bow of the boat and you start to, you know, lose performance. So being able to really weight the boat properly. So it looks like you're like, oh, that tank well doesn't look that big. It's a very big tank well. And you still have in a very large hatch actually to access in the stern.
Very cool, man.
Oh yeah.
Well, it's a cool boat. I mean, right when I first saw it, I was like, yeah, that's real nice and sleek, clean. I like it. So, did we miss anything that we wanted to cover on it?
I'll touch real quick on just the couple real quick things that, again, are not that noticeable right off the bat without watching the full blown walkthrough video. But again, with the weight distribution, that back tank, that back hatch, we specifically fitted to make sure that you could put a 27 group battery inside the hull of the boat. So like if you want a rig like mine, I've got a 100 amp hour Dakota Lithium running my XI3, I can put that weight in the back of the boat with the XI3 on the bow, and that really allows me to get the boat back level. So I'm not, you know, pushing water in the nose or having too much weight on the stern. And so that was a big one, is being able to literally open that hatch lid. You can set it down in there and you close the hatch lid. That battery's not going anywhere. It's like snug fit on a 20 up to a 27 group battery. And then obviously you got the power pole and geometry and stuff like that. But that was another big one. It's completely redesigned steering. So we used to have the fiberglass rods and we still do on most of our FDs, but this boat, we went to that Spectra cable type steering, which just allowed us to get more throw in the rudder and really dial in and make it more intuitive. But yeah, a lot of little things like that, that just seem little, but that steering was it was a lot of parts and a lot of thought that went into developing that and stuff like that. So
very cool, man. Well, Matt, you got anything else, dude?
No, I mean, I think you guys hit a home run with this. It's like Brad said, it's a sleek boat. It looks good, which is always half the battle with anything. If a boat performs great but looks terrible, obviously it's not going to be a hit. It looks good. The redesigned drive, I mean, you hit the things that a lot of tournament anglers and fishermen alike are looking for, to where it's easier to, it's faster to get to your spot. You're not tired when you get there. It's quiet, which is awesome, especially for pressured water.
And durability, that was a big one. And, just making sure and, hold up. You know, and I'll be honest, like we struggled with that. We got a lot better. We made improvements over the old, on the old drive, but you know, first year out of the gate, we struggled with it, and it was just being consistent, I think, was the biggest problem. And we got better, but now we've really took a lot of that out of the equation, and we've just, you know, made it like kind of dummy proof in a lot of ways. But every day, and we talked about this before we got started, we've had meeting after meeting about how we could do better. On even this boat, like what did we do launching this boat that, like, why did it take as long as it took to get it to market? What, you know, in the development process with all these things, how do we streamline that? How do we make it better quality? And what can we do even now to improve on the platform that we have in the future? And we've got a lot of good reviews from consumers that have bought them, and we're literally watching all those and writing down any negative thing that anyone's had to say. No boat's perfect. You know, and even if one person's negative might be another person's positive, but you know, anything that we hear that we're like, okay, let's go take a look at this. Is this legit? Is this something we could, you know, improve on or even, you know, change or something for the future? And so it's really cool to be a part of that. Knowing that we care enough as a team and as a company to want to make the best kayak that we can possibly make.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, it's some of the things you've gone into adding a lot of the little stuff that people might just overlook, but they're there, like the tie downs, the bait scupper, the multi-box, like stuff like that. And then, you know, like you said, with the drive dummy proofing it, I think that's a big thing. A lot of people get into pedal drives and they have to worry about greasing it or cleaning it and all the extra stuff, but having that fully encased it takes, like you said, half of the problem out of the equation completely.
Exactly.
Just because you can just use it and not worry about over greasing, under greasing, screwing it up, breaking it, things like that. Yeah.
That's losing the screw that you take out to put the grease in, which I've done.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like losing the 10 millimeter socket in your set.
Yeah.
I found one today that I lost.
That's funny. I used it today, but I don't use that one that much. How come that's always the one that, like, I feel like I use a half inch socket more than any other socket.
Yeah. This socket is used for everything. Every bolt I've seen to find, like on my truck or anything. Oh, truck, I need to take it, out this. I need to take this out. Oh, it's a 10 mil. You know where my 10 mil is? I don't.
No one knows where their 10 mil is.
Yeah. So like every time I go to like Lowe's or something, I'll buy like two or three 10 mil sockets, just individuals. I have them in a Ziploc baggie. Like there's another one sitting right over there. I'm looking at it because I couldn't find this one that stays down here with all my
other stuff. The same thing with chartreuse and white chatterbaits.
I've got
plenty of black and I never run out of black and blue. I never run out of like any of them, but the chartreuse and white just seems to get depleted. I don't know what I'm doing wrong. I guess I throw it more, but
I'll buy
three times as many chartreuse and white chatterbaits as I do any other.
I've got like nine of them, man. I know exactly what you're doing because I do it. I do the same thing with fire crawl because I throw fire crawl so much.
I've seen it work. I've seen it work. I've been with people that wear me out.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah. Everybody knows Matt as the tackle like hoarder, so he knows everything that's going on with that.
I have like, again, the chartreuse and white, like I have a chatterbait tied on right now that is green pumpkin and chartreuse. I bet I have had that bait. I've retied it a couple times, but I've got the same trailer on that bait for over a year now. Like I have not changed the diesel minnow. It's a 5-inch diesel minnow.
Oh yeah.
And I've caught bull reds. I've caught black drum. My dad caught his first 40-inch bull red on that bait. And I mean, it looks beat up, right?
Yeah.
But I can't lose that one. I put a chartreuse and white on, it's gone. Like 10 minutes. Yeah. I understand.
Yep. Believe me, there's this whole turnstile is just full of baits. And some of these I'll tie on and it'll never get ripped or anything. But the second, like for instance, the second I tie on a big Joshy, I don't have to catch fish on it. It will find the one rock. It will catch on it. And then I'll break it off along with the Jigmaster sled head.
And you know, and when then, you're tying it on, you're like, I'm definitely going to lose this. And
yeah,
I say it. I literally, me and Brad went out Sunday and I was throwing a Joshy and I was like, I threw it first cast. I was like, and it got hung up for a second. And I was like, I told you first cast is going to get hung up. And luckily I bowstringed it and it popped off. And guess what happened? Yeah. 8 casts later. Guess what? It got hung up on a piece of grass.
Someone told me, what was it? They said something about being, you know, doing this for a living or whatever, fishing. I get to fish a lot. And, they were like, I can't believe you got caught in that tree. And I'm like, I make hundreds and hundreds of casts every day. Like,
yeah.
I'm going to get caught in trees just as much as anyone else. It's whether or not I can get it out of that tree when I get it caught is what tells you whether or not I've been doing this for a long time.
Yeah.
Because I'm going to throw a bird's nest and I'm going to get hung in a tree or on a rock. If I can get that bird's nest out pretty quick and get my bait back, then you can tell that I've done it for a while.
Yeah.
I'm about to say, I can take you to a spot that I always catch a smallie on. But I promise in the 5 casts it takes me to catch that smallie, I will get my Ned rig stuck on the same rock or in the same crevice because there's 2 rocks and it'll get stuck there. And I have to sit there and bowstring it. And if I went there, if we had a drought and it was like half a foot deep, I could walk there, scoop my hand and get like 30 Ned rigs and just put them in my boat. Like they're just all there, but there's always a smallmouth there. So like, you know, it is what it is.
That's how you know it's a good spot though.
It is. Well, yeah. I mean, half of my Ned rig, half of my terminal tackle live there. So, yeah.
Well, Jameson, appreciate you coming on the show, man. You got anything else you want to add?
No, I would just say, you know, give it a chance. Get out, try the NAR, try the new Mark IV drive. You know, I'm a big, like, again, find the right boat for you. You know, it may not be one of our boats. Hopefully it is. But try it. See what you think for yourself. I'm excited to hear everyone's opinion on it. You know, I've watched every review that anyone that's got out there and tested it. So, and I'm even taking the boat, you know, to people. I'm going to Florida next week with the boat to let some people review it. So I'm all about hearing feedback on it. And yeah, I think we did a really good job. I'm really proud of our team. So I just wanted to say thanks to them, both R&D internally and our fishing team, who really put their heads together, and it shows, you know. So
awesome. Yeah, I can't wait to try one. I hope we get one in our shop eventually. So
yeah, they're going out the door as fast as we can build them. So
I believe it. It's like anything else out there. It's just crazy times.
Yeah.
All right, man. Matt, got anything else?
Not a thing. This was awesome. Dude. Jameson, I appreciate it. Everyone go over to Instagram, give him a follow. Follow Jackson Kayak. Stay up to date. I'm excited to see what you guys are working on, especially since you're already starting to redesign and rethink some things on the NAR to make it better, which is awesome. Yeah,
there's definitely – it's going to be a fun couple of years. I'll put it that way. Awesome. Thank you guys for having me. And
heck yeah.
Yeah, it was fun.
All right, guys. Perfect. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you guys next week, and you guys have a good one.
Thanks for tuning in to another killer episode here on Paddle and Fin. Be sure to drop a 5-star rating, a thumbs up, or smash that subscribe button on any platform you're listening in on. Be sure to check us out on Waypoint TV, waypointtv.com. Make sure you sign up for the Fantasy Kayak Fishing League at paddleandfin.com/fantasy. You could support this show through Patreon, patreon.com/paddleandfin. Don't forget to check out the website, paddleandfin.com. Catch us on YouTube. If you got a question, comment, or want to see a future guest on the show, be sure to email us at paddleandfin@gmail.com. Shout out to our show supporters, Yak Gadget. You can check out all the fine kayak accessories at yakgadget.com. Pelican Professional. For all your cases, coolers, and lighting needs, go to pelican.com. Rocktown Adventures, your Midwest premier paddle sports destination, go to rocktownadventures.com. Eastport Marina, the beautiful destination on Dale Hollow Lake. If you're looking for lodging, kayaks, kayak accessories, or anything fishing related on the beautiful Dale Hollow Lake, go to eastport.info. And Jigmasters Jigs. When in doubt, get the jig out. Go to jigmasters.com and fill your tackle boxes today.